take drastic measures to sort out the Sittaford mystery. In Agatha Christie's tale set on Dartmoor, it looks like they're all going to have to get round that table once again.
The Sittaford Mystery by Agatha Christie, dramatised in 5 parts by Michael Bakewell, with Melinda Walker as Emily Trefusis, Stephen Tomkinson as Charles Enderby, and Geoffrey Whitehead as Inspector Narracott. Part 5, The Second Séance. The time is 1931.
It's you.
Hello. I hope I'm not butting in, Major.
No, of course not. Go in. Wipe your feet on the mat, if you don't mind. Have a drink?
No, thanks. As a matter of fact, I dropped in to see if we couldn't get together. I've got to see a fellow in Exeter, so I need to go down to Exhampton. And I gather you've booked the chap from the old forge to take you down there.
We've got to go over Trevelyan's things. Police are done with the place now.
You see, I thought we might go down together and share alike, as it were.
Well, certainly, I agree.
Do you know anything about this other Pearson chap that's turned up at Sittaford House? There he was, as large as life this morning, and nobody knows where he's come from. It's worrying my aunt no end.
I believe he's staying at the Willetts.
Yes, but where did he blow in from? Even the Willetts haven't got a private aerodrome. You know, I think there's something very mysterious about that Pearson fellow. It's my impression that he's the chap who did in poor old Trevelyan.
Do you think so?
Well, fellows that go off to the colonies are usually bad hats. And this particular bad hat comes back, tries to touch his uncle for a sum of money, and bats him one when he won't cough up. That's my theory anyway. What do you think?
I think you should mention it to the police.
Thank you for coming over, Narracott. I thought it was time we reviewed your progress on the case. Do sit down.
Thank you, sir.
Your men didn't waste much time tracking down that escaped convict.
He didn't have much of a chance, poor devil. The fog came down just as soon as he'd made his escape. He walked right round in a circle, did about 20 miles, to find himself about half a mile from Princetown at the end of it.
Fremantle Freddy. I've run across him before. Quite a dangerous character.
I'm not really certain about him, sir. He's a kind of Jekyll and Hyde personality. Half the time he passed as an educated, respectable, wealthy man, and then something inside him would snap and he'd just disappear into the underworld. I'm not at all sure that Broadmoor wouldn't be the best place for him.
But that's not really our concern. Anything new on the Trevelyan case?
I'm not entirely happy about it, sir.
You don't think we've got the right man?
I'm not satisfied. To start with, everything pointed the one way, but now, it's different.
Mm. The evidence against Pearson remains the same.
Yes. But there's a good deal of further evidence come to light, sir. There's this other Pearson, Brian, who suddenly turned up out of the blue. Because I was so certain that it was James Pearson who was our man, I simply accepted the statement that Brian Pearson was in Australia. Now it turns out that he was in England all the time. It seems he's been here for 2 months, travelled on the same boat as the Willetts, apparently.
Really?
He had some sort of shipboard romance with the girl. But he never communicated with his family, and neither his sister nor his brother knew he was in England. On Thursday of last week, he left the Ormsby Hotel in Russell Square and drove to Paddington. From then until Tuesday night, when Enderby ran into him, he refuses to account for his movements in any way.
You pointed out to him the gravity of such a course of action.
Said he didn't give a damn. It had nothing to do with the murder, and it was up to us to prove he had.
Cool customer. Why didn't he come forward before, if he's as innocent as he professes to be? His uncle's death was in all the papers on Saturday, his brother was arrested on Monday, yet he made no attempt to come forward.
And he wouldn't have either if that journalist hadn't run across him at Sittaford House last night.
What did Pearson say he was doing there?
He said he'd come to see Miss Willett. She came out of the house to meet him because she didn't want her mother to know about it. That's their story. It's my belief, sir, that if Enderby hadn't run him to earth, he would never have come forward. He'd have gone back to Australia and claimed the inheritance from there.
Quite a live wire, that Mr. Enderby. I'd like to meet him.
There's another piece of information he's put my way. It concerns Martin Daring, the novelist. He's married to the third Pearson, Sylvia. Daring told me he'd spent the afternoon with the publisher and went to a literary dinner in the evening. But Enderby has irrefutable evidence that he wasn't at the dinner at all.
It doesn't necessarily mean a man's a murderer.
I've checked with the train timetables. It would have been just possible for him to have killed the captain, got back home again before midnight. It's a bit far-fetched, but I think I'd better look into it.
Yes. Get on to it at once. I still think the evidence against James Pearson is pretty conclusive, but you'd better follow up the daring alibi.
I don't think I understand you, Inspector.
I think you do, sir. You were not at the literary dinner at the Cecil Hotel on Friday night.
Well, supposing I wasn't, what the hell has that to do with you? What have my movements 5 hours after my wife's uncle was murdered got to do with you or anyone else?
You made a certain statement to us, Mr. Daring, and I want that statement verified. Part of it is already proved to be untrue. I've got to check up on the other half. You say you lunched and spent the afternoon with your American publisher. Can you tell me his name?
Edgar Rosenkranz.
And his address?
Well, he's left England. He sailed for New York on Saturday.
And then he'll still be at sea. What boat is he on?
I really have no idea.
Well, cable his firm in New York. They'll know.
It was the Berengaria.
Thank you, Mr. Daring. I thought you'd remember it.
What are you going to do?
Wireless Mr. Rosenkranz on board ship.
Oh, damn it all, you'll involve me in all kinds of trouble. Well, at least let me write to him myself. You don't know what these Americans are like. Any hint of me being involved in a police matter and my new contract will be finished. Will this suffice? Please confirm my statement. I was with you lunchtime until 4 o'clock, Friday the 14th.
I have no objection to that, Mr. Daring. All I want is the truth.
Pot of tea, scones, and jam.
Thank you.
So, what do you think of Brian Pearson?
A person to be reckoned with, certainly. He's quite unscrupulous, I should think, and if he wanted anything, I don't think he'd let ordinary conventional standards get in his way. He's not plain tame English, and he fulfills all the conditions.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, number one, motive. The same motive, £20,000. Number two, opportunity. Well, nobody knows where he was on Friday afternoon, but we can assume that he was in the neighbourhood.
Any other conditions?
Well, yes. We can't ignore that queer business of the table turning. None of the six people present could have been the actual murderer, but one of them might have been in collusion with the murderer and might have given the game away without meaning to do so. An unconscious piece of self-revelation. There's no link between Major Burnaby and anyone else, and the same applies to Garfield, Rycroft and Duke, but when we come to the Willetts, it's different. There's a link between Violet Willett and Brian Pearson. Those two are on very intimate terms, and that girl was all on the jump after the murder.
You think she knew?
Well, she and her mother. There's something very... Oh.
What's the matter?
Do you know that strange feeling you get when someone's looking at you? I feel now as if someone's eyes were burning the back of my neck. Is it all fantasy, or is somebody really staring at me?
There's a woman at a table in the window. She's staring at you.
Oh.
Hello?
What is it?
Ronnie Garfield. He's just come in and he's shaking hands with her. I think she's saying something about us.
I'll see if I can see her in my pocket mirror. I'm sure my nose could do with a dab of powder. It's Aunt Jennifer. They're getting up.
They're going. Do you want to speak to her?
No. I think it's better to pretend I haven't seen her.
Well, anyway, why shouldn't they have tea together?
Well, don't you see? It's another link between who was at the séance and Captain Trevelyan's family.
It shows you never know.
It shows that you are always having to begin again.
In more ways than one.
What do you mean?
Nothing at present. We've got to get through this first. Afterwards.
Afterwards.
I followed up your lead about Mr. Daring, Mr. Fusis, and sent a cable to that American publisher friend of his about the long lunch they had together. Mm. At first, he confirmed Daring's story, but I still had my suspicions, so I sent him another cable. Do you want to see what I said?
Oh, yes. Information needed re-murder of Captain Trevelyan. Do you support Martin Daring's statement of alibi for Friday afternoon?
And here's what he replied. Had no idea it was a criminal case. Did not see Martin Daring Friday. Agreed to support his statement because I believed his wife was having him watched for divorce proceedings.
How men do stick together. Poor Sylvia. In some ways, I really do think men are beasts. That's why it's so nice when one finds a man on whom one really can rely.
I've gone further than I should in letting you know about this.
Well, I think it's adorable of you. I shall never forget it.
Well, mind. Not a word to anybody.
You mean I'm not to tell Mr. Enderby?
Journalists will be journalists.
Inspector, tell me, who is Mr. Duke? You remember, we met you coming out of his cottage in Sittaford.
Ah, yes, of course. To tell the truth, I thought I would like to have an independent account of that table-turning business. Major Burnaby's not a first-rate hand at description.
I see. Mr. Duke seems to lead such a blameless life, but perhaps he hasn't always led a blameless life, and perhaps the police know that.
You like guessing, don't you, Miss Trefusis?
When people don't tell you things, you have to guess.
Well, I won't keep you any longer.
I can see I'm not going to get any further on this one. But thank you again, Inspector. Goodbye.
Au revoir, Miss Trefusis.
Yes, Inspector?
Was it as I thought?
Quite right, sir. But it wasn't the Duchy at Princetown. It was the hotel at Two Bridges.
Well, that settles it all right. Anything else?
Yes, sir. Brian Pearson sailed from Australia on the Phidias. She touched at Cape Town, but no passengers of the name of Willett were aboard. There was a Mrs. and Miss Johnson from Melbourne who answered the description of the Willetts.
Probably neither Johnson nor Willett is the right name. I think I've got them taped out all right. Good. That's enough to be getting on with.
Looks as if Mrs. Curtis has gone to bed.
She's left us some supper.
You've got a letter, Emily.
Oh.
Exhampton postmark.
Let's see. Oh, it's from Mrs. Belling at the Three Crowns. Dear Miss Trefusis, you said as how you would like to hear if anything at all should happen that was in any way out of the common, even if not important. My niece has stumbled upon something which she says isn't of any importance, but rather peculiar. The police said that nothing was taken from Captain Trevelyan's house, but it seems that a pair of his boots is missing, which Evans noticed when he was going over the things. The boots were the thick kind you rub oil into, which the captain would have worn if he had gone out in the snow. But as he didn't go out in the snow, it doesn't make any sense. I don't suppose it is of any importance, but I thought I ought to let you know.
Boots?
Oh, it must mean something.
Boots suggest something to do with footprints.
Oh, I know, but footprints don't seem to enter into this case.
I give it up.
Well, I'm not going to give it up. I'm going to get to the bottom of it.
Hello there, Mr. Ryecroft.
Oh, good afternoon, Ronnie.
You going where I'm going?
To the Willetts? Yes, of course.
My aunt says it's unfeeling of them to invite people to tea so soon after the funeral and all that. But that's all bunkum. Trevelyan wasn't a relation of theirs or anything like that.
And even so, Mrs. Willett seems to have taken it all rather hard. She's aged about 20 years in the last week. Trevelyan's death must have been the most frightful shock to her in some way or other.
Perhaps she knew the old boy rather better than she let on. Queer if she turned out to be the old man's long-lost wife, who he deserted in his youth and didn't recognize.
Oh, it doesn't seem likely.
Dreadful to think that just a week ago we were trudging up to the Willetts just as we are now.
Seems infinitely longer. Yeah, oh, there's Burnaby.
Afternoon, Major. Aren't you coming to the Willetts?
I don't think so. They sent a note asking me. But, well, I don't feel like it.
All the same, Major, I wish you would come. I've got a reason.
Reason? Well, what sort of reason?
I'd like to try an experiment.
What sort of experiment?
Well, I'd rather not tell you beforehand, but I shall need you to back me up when the time comes. Will you do that?
Well, all sounds very mysterious, but you can count on me. I give you my word. I'll go and get my hat.
So splendid of you all to turn out. Viola, just make sure the tea's ready.
Yes, Mother.
So frightful without any servants. You know Mr. Pearson, I think?
Of course. How do you do?
Yes, how Garfield, do you do? Mr. Ryecroft, Major.
This will be our last little gathering, I'm afraid.
Oh, you don't mean it.
Yes, Mr. Ryecroft. We have to forego the rest of the winter in Sittaford.
Oh.
Personally, of course, I love it. The snow and the tours and the wildness of it all. But the domestic problem is too difficult. It defeats me.
I thought you were going to get a chauffeur butler and a handyman.
No. No, I've had to give up on that idea.
This is going to be a terrible blow to us all, you know. When are you going?
On Monday, I expect. Unless we can get away tomorrow.
So soon? And where are you off to?
Oh, London at first, and then we may go to the Riviera.
Well, it will be a great loss.
Too kind of you, Mr. Ryecroft. Well,
Shall we have tea?
And what about you, Mr. Pearson? Are you off too?
Yeah, I shall go to London. Naturally, I shan't go abroad until my brother's cleared of this ridiculous charge.
Never believed he did it. Not for a moment.
None of us think so. Well, that'll be Mr. Duke. Let him in, will you, Brian?
Yes, of course. It's not Mr. Duke. It's that damn journalist.
Well, you'll have to let him in, just the same.
Always poking his nose in where he's least wanted.
Hello, Mrs. Willett. I thought I'd just drop in and see how things were. I wondered where everyone in Sitterford had got to. Now I know.
Do have some tea, Mr. Enderby.
Awfully nice of you. Emily isn't here, then. I suppose she must be with your aunt, Mr. Garfield.
Hmm? Not that I know of. I thought she'd gone to Exhampton.
No, she's back from there. I saw the car go past the post office. Still, I don't think it's a vital problem.
Do you play bridge, Mr. Enderby? We were just going to...
Just a moment, Mrs. Willett. May I say something?
Of course.
As you know, I am deeply interested in psychic phenomena. A week ago, in this very room, we all had an amazing experience.
It was horrible.
Yes, I know, my dear Miss Willett, I know. However, although the police arrested James Pearson for the murder, some of us in this room do not believe him to be the guilty party. Now, what I would like to propose is that we repeat the experience of last Friday.
No.
Though approaching it this time in a rather different spirit.
I say, that's a bit thick after what happened last time.
Mrs. Willett, what do you say?
Frankly, Mr. Rycroft, I do not like the idea. That miserable business last week made a most disagreeable impression on me.
What are you getting at exactly? Are you proposing that the spirit should tell us the name of Captain Trevelyan's murderer? That seems a pretty tall order.
Yes, but it was a pretty tall order, as you call it, to tell us that the captain was dead. I am in earnest, Mrs. Willett. I beg of you, let us make the experiment.
I don't like it. I really don't. Major Burnaby, you were Captain Trevelyan's friend. What do you say?
Is this what you referred to earlier, Rycroft?
It is.
I don't like the idea, but I promised I'd back you up. Let's try it.
Since Mr. Duke isn't here, perhaps Mr. Pearson will take his place.
Brian, I beg you, please don't.
What does it matter? It's all nonsense anyway.
Now, that is not the right spirit. Mr. Enderby...
I'm not in on this, and you probably wouldn't trust me anyway. I'll take shorthand notes of any phenomena. That's the right word, isn't it?
Good. Then could you turn the lights off, Mr. Enderby?
Just a minute. What's the time?
5:25.
Exactly the time that...
Turn the lights off.
I don't like this.
Silence, please. Is anyone there? Is anyone there?
All right, that's the front door. I'll go and see who it is.
I'll put the lights on.
Emily?
It's the police.
John Burnaby, I charge you with the murder of Joseph Trevelyan on Friday the 14th instant. And I hereby warn you that anything you may say will be taken down and may be used in evidence.
But how on earth could Burnaby have killed Trevelyan? Well, it isn't humanly possible. If Trevelyan was killed at 5:25...
He wasn't. He was killed at about 6:00.
Well, but even then...
I know. You'd never guess unless you happen to think about it. Skis.
Skis?
I don't understand you.
I'll explain. Burnaby deliberately engineered the table turning. When he saw that it was going to snow again before very long, he created the impression that Captain Trevelyan was dead and got everyone worked up. Then he pretended to be very upset and insisted on starting for Exhampton.
Yes, but I still don't...
He went home, buckled on his skis, which were kept in a shed in the garden with a lot of other tackle, and started. It's a wonderful run to Exhampton, all downhill. It would only take 10 minutes.
So it would.
He arrived at the back window and rapped. Trevelyan, all unsuspecting, let him in. Then, when Captain Trevelyan's back was turned, he picked up that sandbag thing and killed him.
How horrible.
He had plenty of time. He wiped and cleaned the skis and put them in the cupboard in the dining room, pushed in amongst all the golf clubs and fishing tackle. Then I suppose he forced the window and pulled out all the drawers and things to make it look as though someone had broken in.
A rafty devil!
Then, just before 8 o'clock, all he had to do was go out, make a detour onto the road higher up and come puffing and panting into Exhampton, just as though he'd walked all the way from Sittaford and go straight to the police station. As long as no one thought of skis, he had a perfect alibi. And another fall of snow had covered up all his traces by then.
But they were friends. Burnaby and Trevelyan, old friends. I mean, it's unthinkable.
That's what I thought. I couldn't see why. That's why I had to come and see Inspector Narracott and Mr. Duke. And between us, we got the thing clear.
Mr. Duke?
Do you remember telling me, Charles, that Evans mentioned that Captain Trevelyan used to send in solutions to competitions in his name?
Oh, yes, because he was worried they'd think Sittaford House too grand an address.
Well, that's what he did in the football competition you gave Major Burnaby £5,000 for. It was Captain Trevelyan's solution, really, and he sent it in Burnaby's name. Number one, the cottage is Sittaford. Sounds a pretty humble address.
So Major Burnaby did get our letter on Friday morning telling him he'd won £5,000.
Now, he wanted that £5,000. Wanted it badly. He'd invested in some shares which had gone wrong and lost a lot of money. The idea must have come into his head quite suddenly, I should think. Perhaps when he realised it was going to snow that evening. If Trevelyan were dead, he wouldn't have to hand the money over and no one would ever know.
But my dear young lady, how did you come to learn all this? And what put you on the right track?
It was quite by chance, really. Mrs. Belling had told me that a pair of Captain Trevelyan's boots were missing. It seemed odd somehow. And I became convinced that if I could find them, they would provide me with a clue as to what had happened. I got Mr. Kirkwood to give me the key to Captain Trevelyan's house. Major Burnaby had cleared out some of the cups and trophies, but otherwise, the place was still untouched.
And did you find the boots?
Yes, I did. They'd been stuffed up the chimney. They were ski boots. And I remembered I'd seen two pairs of skis in the cupboard. I looked and found that one pair was longer than the other. The boots fitted the longer pair of skis. The toe clips on the shorter pair were adjusted for a much smaller pair of boots. And they were the skis that belonged to Captain Trevelyan. The other pair were Major Burnaby's.
He ought to have hidden them somewhere else.
Oh, no, where else could he hide them? And it wasn't likely that the police would notice whether Captain Trevelyan had two pairs of skis, particularly with so much other junk in there.
But I still don't see why Burnaby hid the boots in the chimney.
Everything depended on nobody thinking about skis. I suppose he thought that the skis were safe buried away in the cupboard, but a pair of ski boots lying around might just start somebody thinking.
Which is what they did to you.
Mm.
Is that everything?
Yes, why?
Well, because if that's it, I want to rush to the telegraph office and get in touch with my paper. Excuse me, everybody.
Oh, so that's that.
You look worn out.
What you need is a pick-me-up. Brandy?
What I need is a powder puff and some lipstick. What with all the excitement,
come up to my room. You can use mine.
Ah, that's better. I feel almost human.
You've been wonderful.
Oh, not really. Underneath it all, I've been wobbly as a jelly with a sort of sick feeling in my middle.
Oh, no. I felt much the same myself. I've been so terrified about Brian.
But surely no one really suspected him.
Oh, they couldn't get him for killing Captain Trevelyan. But if once he'd said where he was during that time, they'd have soon found out that it was he who organised my father's escape.
What did you say?
You may as well know now. Father was the convict who escaped. That's why Mother and I came here. Poor father, for years he hasn't been really right in the head. Something odd comes over him and then he does these dreadful things. We met Brian on the way over. He and I, we fell in love and he wanted to do everything in his power to help. Brian worked out a way to get father out of Princetown. The arrangement was that after father escaped, he was to go straight across country and hide in the Pixie's cave. And then later, he and Brian were to be our two men-servants.
So that was why you got rid of all the servants?
And then the fog came down and it all went wrong.
I'm so awfully sorry.
Poor father. He isn't really responsible for his actions.
Can't anything be done?
He's very ill. The exposure and the awful cold out on the moor. He's got pneumonia. I can't help feeling that if he doesn't pull through, it may almost be the best thing.
Oh, you poor love.
Brian's been so wonderful.
It isn't everyone who'd want to marry a convict's daughter. What about Brian's brother? Are you still going to...
Well, that's just it.
I told you Burnaby was a jealous man. Friends, indeed. For more than 20 years, Trevelyan had done everything better than Burnaby. He skied better and he climbed better and he shot better and he did crossword puzzles better. Burnaby was a small-natured, narrow-minded man. He let it get on his nerves.
I'm sure you're right. I had to come and tell you, Miss Pursehouse. It seems so unfair that you should be out of everything. Uh-huh. By the way, did you know that your nephew knew my Aunt Jennifer? I saw them having tea together. I almost suspected them for a time.
The only thing Ron is guilty of is sponging. She's his godmother. He's always saying he's going to see a fellow in Exeter.
Well, I must be on my way. I've got a lot to do.
Now, what have you got to do, young woman? I should say you've done your bit.
Well, not quite. I must go up to London and see Jim's insurance company people and persuade them not to prosecute him over that little matter of borrowed money.
And do you think you'll be able to persuade them?
Yes.
And then?
Then what?
Which of them? Which of them is to be the fortunate man?
Emily, I've been looking for you everywhere.
Have you telegraphed your paper?
The whole story. They're wild about it. Well, what a scoop. But there's just one thing, though. Tell me about the mysterious Mr. Duke.
Ah, that's just the point. He isn't Mr. Duke. He's ex-Chief Inspector Duke, late of Scotland Yard.
That's fantastic.
When he retired, he came to live up here, and being nice and modest, he didn't want people to know about him. He did keep his eyes and ears open, though. That's why Narracott kept popping over to see him.
So that ties everything up.
Mm.
Except for one little thing.
And what's that?
Us.
Us?
Well, I don't have to play the game over poor Jim Pearson anymore, now he's out of danger. Well, you know that I'm crazy about you, and you like me. But as for Pearson, well, anyone can make a mistake. The question is, would you prefer a registry office or a church or what?
Nothing doing.
Huh?
No.
But Emily...
If you want to know, I love Jim passionately.
But you can't.
I can, and I do.
But you made me think...
I said that it was wonderful to have someone one could rely on.
Yes, but I thought...
Well, I can't help what you thought. You've got your scoop. You're a made man. You don't need me. No really strong man needs a woman. She only holds him back.
I've never heard such rubbish. It's like one of those plays here on a wireless. You've broken my heart.
I've done no such thing. Oh, look, there's Mr. Duke coming out of his cottage. Go and grab him. Persuade him to give you an exclusive interview.
Do you think he would?
No harm in trying.
You're right. I'll give it a go. Mr. Duke, I say, just a moment...
You don't think that maybe you're making a mistake, miss? You're sure the other young gentleman is worth as much as Mr. Enderby?
Oh, no, he isn't.
Well?
Charles Enderby is the kind of young man who is simply bound to get on. But I simply do not know what would happen to Jim if I weren't there to look after him. Look where he'd be now if it weren't for me.
In the last part of The Sittaford Mystery by Agatha Christie, Emily Trefusis was played by Melinda Walker. Charles Enderby, Stephen Tomkinson. Inspector Narracott, Geoffrey Whitehead. And Major Burnaby, Norman Bird. Elwood was played by Jack May. Martin Daring, David Googe. Ryecroft, John Moffat. Ronnie Garfield, Nigel Greaves. Mrs. Willett, Susan Westerby. Violet, Victoria Carling. And Brian Pearson, Charles Simpson. Miss Pursehouse was played by Margaret Courtney. Mrs. Curtis by Barbara Atkinson, and The Policeman by Vincent Brimble. The Sittaford Mystery was dramatised and directed by Michael Bakewell.
And on Monday in the Crime and Thrillers, it's the return of P Division with a collection of stories dredging up bodies in and about Glasgow. On Monday, the grisly find is on a building site, and it's an hour-long case called The Bone Pit, this Monday in the Crime and Thrillers Hour.
Hi, I'm Paul Putner, but you might know me better as Fat Paul from Fat Fighters.
We're all fat.
And I'll be here on Saturday night with a Feast of Little Britain themed...